John, we have at least almost a week of baseball, and the two New York teams could hardly be going in a different direction early in the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is fascinating to see the Yankees outperform and the Mets underperform. I'm not taking any sides or anything, but I think that makes for an interesting story of what is going on with the Yankees and certainly what is going on with the Mets. And we're going to get into every detail that we can about those two teams.
Yes, we'll definitely deep dive both the Mets and Yankees. They're undefeated and their non-winning starts so far this season. And we'll talk to the general manager of the NL champion Arizona Diamondbacks, Mike Hazen, about Jordan Montgomery more and more if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
John, we really couldn't have started our seasons much different because the New York teams couldn't have started much different. You were with the Yankees in Houston. They swept four games there. Then, as we're talking, they won their next game in Arizona. I was with the Mets over the weekend against Milwaukee. Not a good look. They lost all three. Then they lost the fourth yesterday. I'm not sure we're going to get in a game today. It's pouring as I'm talking to you from Citi Field. John, why don't we start with the positive New York news, which is how the Yankees have gotten off here. And I think there's probably a positive answer, a singular answer to this. But if I asked you what stood out to you for 4 days in Houston in the beginning of the season, what stood out to John Heyman about the Yankees?
Yeah, what's the obvious answer? Soto? I mean, we knew Soto was fantastic, right? So, you know. Obviously, their offense is going to improve. It wasn't good last year. It was surprisingly bad last year. And, I mean, they look great as a team, as an offense. I mean, Judge has not been himself yet. He's really not hitting to this point. Stanton hasn't looked great. Rizzo hasn't looked great. And they're doing this largely. They got Soto. I mean, Cabrera is hot. I mean, obviously, puts a lot of work in. Maybe he's improved. And maybe he'll play a lot with LeMahieu out. But, you know, another answer is Volpe. I mean, I wrote for 3 or 4 days about Cabrera and Soto, and I looked at the box score today, and Volpe has a 1600 OPS, higher than both of them by far. You know, we heard about it, flattened out his swing in spring training, and, you know, sometimes those positive spring training stories amount to nothing. But in this case, I think it's a lot, and I think he's going to be a far different player. He's not going to hit what he hit last year, about 210, 220. Not going to happen. Vastly improved offense, and you know, at this point they look great. We'll see. It's a long season, and 5 games do not make a season.
John, the last time they started 5-0, they went 6-0. You and I were on the beat. That was Buck Showalter's first year in 1992, and they finished 10 games under 500. So we know how long a season things could be. Having said that, what really stuck out to me watching it from afar was they really had become a 2-man team. In recent years, as Judge and Cole went, so went the team. So when Judge got hurt, the offense, which wasn't very good anyway, kind of completely tanked. The Yankees were 23-10 when Cole started a game last year. They were 59-70 when he wasn't. Pretty obvious statement. He isn't playing for 2 months. They began the season going around the rotation once and they were 5-0. The offense didn't die just because you pointed this out. You know, this is maybe the worst Judge will be all season, and they still did enough. And I thought within the offense, the lefty diversity they suddenly have, it's just such a different look from these last few years with Verdugo and Soto and Grisham, Cabrera, the switch hitter from the left side, Austin Wells offering something. And I also thought that against Houston, who often plays baseball better than them, you know, they move the runners over, hit the opposite field, run the bases well, defend. I thought the Yankees were better at all the little things than the Astros for the series. They defended much better than Houston, especially in clutch moments late. The most important bunt of the series was laid down by Austin Wells. The most important stolen base of the series was by Gleyber Torres. You know, Verdugo hustled to create a tough play for Jeremy Peña and was safe at a key moment early in the series. I just thought they outplayed the Astros in every way, including kind of nuance, and the brutal Yankees of the last few years, like trying to bludgeon people with just power pitching and power bats, that felt different. And if I was going to be encouraged, encouraging for the next 6 months.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember the 6-0 start by Buck Showalter's team. You have a better memory than I do, but you know, it is 5-0 now against good teams, right? Obviously, Houston was four games. They're going to be a good team. I mean, I'm sure the people in Houston were pretty upset. They're not used to losing lately. Arizona is going to be a good team this year. They were in the World Series last year. It's very, very impressive. And you're absolutely right. The defense was very good. They didn't make those goofy errors. I mean, Jeremy Peña made a bad error. Mashinsky, the reliever, made a bad error for Houston. They didn't play a great series. Yankees did. The one thing that stood out, I'm sorry to pick on them, but you can't get picked off when Juan Soto's up at bat, right? So Grisham made the one mistake, and I did have some Yankee, at least one Yankee teammate say to me, point that out. Like, I mean, obviously I knew that, but, you know, that's the most obvious thing for the team. Yeah. You can't be picked off with Soto up or with Judge up. You got to stay close enough to the bag that it's not happening. So they made that one mistake. That's pretty good over 36 innings in Houston, 37 innings. So, you know, it was a great series. And also the pitching. Now, I think the question of the pitching is it's going to hold up. I mean, I think these guys do have talent. So I'm not ready to make any conclusions about the pitching yet. You know, Rodon just toughed it out. Obviously, Nestor battled it out. Stroman was really good. I thought Schmidt was good. But it's one time through the rotation. The question is the depth and the health of the pitcher. So no conclusions there, but I think we can conclude offense better, more diversified, more left-handed, all good.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting to me. And again, I watch it from afar, John. I thought one of the most important things in that series happened right away, which was Nestor Cortes gave up four runs before he got four outs in the opener. And there was a pitcher warming up, I believe Nick Birdie. And if he's out early, the weekend goes completely different, right? You got to burn your bullpen when, you know, the time of year where you're not getting a lot out of your starters. You're trying not to go back-to-back with relievers. Cortez's ability to kind of get his act back together and actually outlast Framber Valdez in that game. He pitched longer than him, kind of put their pitching in order for the weekend, which was important. And then I'll take it one step further. Luis Gil's not in the rotation if Gerrit Cole is healthy, and I'm sure that's the exchange the Yankees would want, any Yankee fan would want, but his stuff is really good. I watched the game last night. Again, can he hold it together for 130 innings this year or for whatever they'll allow him to go? I don't know, but man, that was impressive to watch.
I think there's talent in that rotation. I mean, Rodon is talented too, but boy, I mean, he was in trouble all the time. It felt like he was, going max effort from the start. And he suddenly had to change his jersey after three innings. He sweat so much. It wasn't that hot. We were indoors. I do think there's still concern in that rotation. But as I said, lineup much better, makes a huge difference. They're going to score a ton of runs. I do think part of the reason that their pitchers outlasted some of these Houston guys, Hunter Brown has great stuff, but he didn't last five innings. It seems like Soto's outlook and his strategy at the plate seems to have rubbed off on the other guys. Now, they're not going to be like Soto. There aren't going to be other guys in the lineup with 130 walks when we look at the end of the year. And I don't think Soto will either with Judge behind him. He probably will walk maybe 100 times, not his usual 130 times. But it does feel like the other guys are going to school on Soto, and I think that's another plus with this offense.
Yeah, John, again, I'll take you back to those early 90 Yankees. I thought that when they started bringing in people like Mike Stanley and Mike Gallego, when they turned Roberto Kelly into Paul O'Neill, when they brought in Wade Boggs, they were all influential in like dragging out and grinding out at bats. It became the Yankee ethos as an offense for about 20 years. So I do think there is influence. On the bad side of offense, the Mets have scored one or no runs in three of their first four games. Now, I assume at some point Brandon Nimmo's going to hit, and Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso and probably Jeff McNeil, but it hasn't happened early. You have a new administration up top, baseball operations in David Stearns. You have a new manager in the dugout in Carlos Mendoza. Every team in baseball had at least one four-game losing streak last year. But, man, it always looks worse when it's 0-4. And this, it looks uninspiring and not great. I wonder what it's looked like from a distance to you, John.
Well, it's 0-4 after a poor season where they won 75 games, right? So, I mean, the fans go in skeptical. They knew that it was a transition year. And, you know, they're obviously off to a bad start. Now, I cannot come on here and start trashing the Mets after I wrote 22 good things to like about the Mets on the eve of the season. I look like a complete idiot, so I can't do that. They are better than this. I do think they are at least a 500 team. They will be better. I mean, obviously, some depends on injuries, and they've already had McGill now go down, which is another issue. I think in the minors, they've got some reinforcements. I think, you know, I think Lucchese and Budo are decent reinforcements at Peterson eventually. So I don't think it's terrible there. I think they have some decent depth. You know, they obviously haven't hit. And, you know, I mean, Lindor is much better than this. Nimmo's much better than this. McNeil's better than this. So is Alonso. Their nucleus is not terrible. And, it's something that it's dragged on into the next season from last season, which we thought was a fluke. Now, you know, last season we had higher hopes with two Hall of Famers in the rotation. Obviously, the ace now has gone down in Senga. They're hopeful he'll be back in, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks, maybe, if they're fortunate. But, you know, right now I understand why our Met fans are down. I think they'll be back. They're not going to compete with the Phillies. They're certainly not going to compete with the Braves. The league has gotten much tougher. Arizona's better than they'd been. San Francisco's much better. San Diego's better. It's not going to be easy for them to get to the playoffs, but they're certainly a lot better than this, and it's just unfortunate because you're right. To have the four-game losing streak at the beginning feels a lot worse than in the middle.
Yeah. Ohtani, turn your laptop off or whatever you're watching us on. If I were setting an over-under, John, I would go June 15th on Senga. They keep saying nothing's wrong, but they keep slow playing him. So I'm going to say, you know, it's a shoulder capsule. The history there is very iffy about, especially keeping your velocity. I'm a little more worried than the average bear about how slow they've played this and what exactly they have. You know, if I were trying to be optimistic, John, the last time they kind of hired a Yankee coach straight from the Yankees to be their manager, Willie Randolph, his tenure in 2005 began. They lost their first five games. They then won their next six. They finished 83-79. If there were three wild cards that year, they would have been the third one. So it's a reminder again. Every team had a four-game losing streak last year. 25 out of 30 had at least a five-game losing streak. It looks bad. What would worry me is Severino looked like Severino last year. You know, they've used some of the guys in the bullpen. Like last year, Billy Epler's thing was, oh, we brought in a lot of arms and diversity. Some of them will stick and be good. They've done the kind of the same thing here. Like, you know, Tonkin blew up a little bit last night. It hasn't been great. They need to kind of have a better vibe about them. To your point, they're not like, say, a really good team with a 4 or 5 game winning streak, you know, coming off a strong season. Like the Phillies opened 1-3 this year. I think we believe the Phillies are going to be one of the 3 or 4 best teams in the National League. So the fact that they started 1-3 feels different than the Mets starting 0-4.
Yeah, it's a bad feeling, but you know, as we said, it's like 2% of the season. So right. You know, I don't want to draw too many conclusions. Not just because I wrote that they're better than we think at the beginning. I actually do think that they're better than we think, and I do think Lindor is a great player, and Alonso's a great player, and Nimmo's a very good player, and I do believe McNeil is still a very good player. So their nucleus is not bad. JD Martinez is on the way. Their closer is bad. You know, he looked close to what he was.
John Manaea looked great last night.
Fantastic, right?
As bad as Severino looked, Manaea looked good yesterday.
Right. Well, their pitching has been okay. You know, I mean, but Manaea really throwing 94, 95, getting up there when he needed to. You know, I do think that they're a decent team. It's just an unfortunate beginning. And I get why the fans would be alarmed after the season they had last year.
Yeah, and, you know, the problem is I think we both think that there's going to be this kind of congestion for the second and third wild card in the National League. And, you know, you're going to have to maximize out as much as possible. I'm not sure that 83, 84, 85, you might have to go higher than that to get in. So, you know, it's only 2% of the season. Just let's just say it's a bad vibe and they need to kind of like do a U-turn sooner than later. One of those teams that we expect to be very involved in this race for a playoff spot is the team that represented the National League in the World Series last year off of an 84-win season, them playing great in October. That's the Arizona Diamondbacks, and their general manager, Mike Hazen, joins us next on the show.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
John and I appreciate Mike Hazen, general manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, joining us. I believe Mike's eighth season with the Diamondbacks, defending National League champion Diamondbacks, who are in the midst of a series with the Yankees as we speak. And Mike, there's a lot of obvious reasons to talk to you, but probably the most obvious off the bat is you made a big sign late in the running here, just as the season was beginning. Signing Jordan Montgomery to a contract, 1 year at $25 million. It could vest as much as another $25 million for next season. I just wonder, can you take us through this a little from maybe soup to nuts? A lot of teams compared him to Eduardo Rodriguez, who signed for $480 million with you. Was he on your board at the beginning of this offseason in that group? And how did we get from there to here?
Yeah, certainly having seen him in the World Series, he was on our radar for as much as he dominated us at times last year. He's an exceptional pitcher. You know, we kind of set out with the goal of getting a starting pitcher somehow, some way, either trade or free agency, and we ended up landing Eduardo fairly early in the offseason. And at that point, we kind of turned our sights more to the position player group and the offense and spent the majority of the rest of our offseason going down that road. And, you know, I don't know. I think we were like I said, all through spring training. I mean, people asked me if we were done, and I don't know that you're ever done, because until everybody's off the board and everybody stops moving, I don't think you can be done. And so, you know, we felt like there was an opportunity here. We kind of jumped in at the end, and we were able to push something across. I think we offered a pretty good opportunity destination for him. Hopefully we'll be a good club. He'll be pitching in a prominent situation. And we are fortunate to add another starting pitcher that we feel like is going to be critical for us to have success in the National League, given how competitive the National League is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, folks are saying, you know, what a great deal that you got, 1 year, $25 million, with potential of 2 years, $50 million with the opt-out. On the other hand, the Diamondbacks are, while a big market, are not a big revenue team. You're not in the top 10 in revenue. How are you able to convince your owner to spend $25 million after you presumably we're already near your budget.
Over our budget?
I don't know.
Ken and Derek are extremely competitive, as everyone knows. And Ken has consistently come and told us that when the team is in a competitive window, when we're in a competitive cycle the way we are, he wants to keep pushing the gas pedal down, and we appreciate that. Obviously it's our responsibility to do things responsibly and smart, but at some point, you know, given the window we have some of our veteran players, we continue to owe them the opportunity to play with better and better players and to show that last year wasn't just some abnormal run through the playoffs, that we have some staying power in the league. And I think we do have that we have a good mix of young players on our roster that will keep us, semi-stable through this. And then we have some veteran players that have been here and are, you know, various stages of their contract situation coming to the end at various points in time. And we felt like we had a team right now that had the opportunity to get back into the playoffs this year, try to do what we did last year again, as hard as that may be. And by adding good players, not only that are good players for the regular season, but obviously showed the ability to perform at the highest level in the playoffs. That's also something that we strongly pushed in terms of what this signing might mean. Because you look at it going into the trading deadline, we're going to need – everyone needs starting pitching at the trading deadline. Everybody. I don't care who what team you are. Every single team is out there looking for it. We know coming off of last year's trade deadline, I believe, is going to be replicated again this year, which is there was not a lot of supply on the market. I don't think there's going to be a lot of supply with how competitive the landscape is in the game, which is great for the game, but bad for a buyer. And if you need that starting pitcher, I mean, what would you add to pay for him in a trade? Not maybe Jordan Montgomery, but somebody else. And we just felt like weighing all that investment, it just made sense for us to do it now.
It sounds like you just told us what your case was to Ken Kendrick, maybe. It sounded pretty compelling. I don't have the money to do it, but it was compelling. Look, I think at the end, Mike, I do believe at least the Yankees were trying there a little harder than they were letting on to do it. Do you have a feel of what the end game here was, what the marketplace was you were dealing with? And I just wonder if you could, it feels like you jumped in late and it moved quickly. Can you just take us through the end game of trying to feel out what the market is, who's in it, and why you were able to cross the finish line?
Yeah, I don't have a window into. I mean, unfortunately, you know, you try to, you know, gather information of what your competition might be, but it's a very dark box, and some of the speculation you hear, what you read publicly, it's totally incomplete. So I really don't know. I mean, look, he's a really good pitcher. I'm sure there were a lot of suitors out there. I don't know where we made sense relative to others. I haven't necessarily asked him that question or talked to him about why all that went down. I'm sure in time we will have those conversations, but it all moved so fast at the end. I think opening day was probably some type of time where, you know, the season's starting. Guys want to start playing. So we kind of felt like that was a time for us to jump in if it was going to happen. And I felt like we were pretty aggressive in terms of what we were offering. I felt like $25 million was a lot of money for us and what we've done to date. It wasn't like we went in there, limping into the race there. I felt like we at least made a competitive offer and we were going to see where it took us. And that's what happened. But I don't know who was in it. You never really do. I'm sure. But I'm sure there were different options for him to explore.
I should ask you, when are Montgomery and Eduardo Rodriguez going to be ready for your rotation?
Yeah, we're looking at Monty probably the middle of April, plus or minus. So he's going to make – he threw yesterday out to 50 pitches. He'll make a couple of rehab starts, and then I'm hoping he's going to be up and ready. Erod's doing really well. He's actually progressing pretty aggressively relative to what we thought the injury might be. And that's good. He's throwing. I don't know exactly when he's going to get off the mound, but I wouldn't anticipate it. It's too long. And once that happens, if that happens in relatively short order, he hasn't been down that long. And so the ramp back up shouldn't be crazy. I would hope that we're going to be seeing these guys in our rotation within the next, both of them within, I don't know, the next month is probably semi-realistic. Jordan will definitely be in front of Erod though.
Yeah, I believe Jordan throws his first minor league game Sunday for your AAA team, if the reporting is accurate, out of your group in Arizona. Mike, one of the things that came up a lot with Montgomery in the offseason is just how to value this player who, he doesn't swing and doesn't have a ton of swing and miss like the typical guy, but yet proved he could play in the biggest market, has proved he could play on the biggest stage. He feels like one of the 30 best starters in the game. And if that's true, like you're a number one someplace, where do you? Like, how do you value this player? Do you think of guys as number ones and twos and threes? And if so, where does he fit in how your group values a starting pitcher?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges with how you describe it is kind of what the chase is for within the like hyperventilating over swing and miss as being like the quality that everyone has to possess. Like you're not gonna have any players on your team, right? Like it's just our entire starting rotation that went to the World Series last year. It's not built on, this you're just generating swings and misses all over the place. Like it's we have guys in our rotation that really know how to pitch. We feel like Erod and Jordan fit that bill in a lot of ways too. Like they know what they're doing with the ball, and they know how to work around a zone. They know how to stay away from and challenge who they're smart. I think it fits along with what I see our rotation as being fairly flat. Certainly, Zach and Merrill probably stand above in terms of what they've done, but the next two guys, and then we think Brandon Pfaadt's going to be right underneath that. I think 1-5, which is the key during the regular season, is every day you go out there and have a chance to win. I think these five guys are going to give us that chance when all's said and done. And I think in where 84 wins got us into the playoffs last year and won't this year, and getting up to 87, 88 wins, which was a must for me in terms of where we're going to be standing, given where the wild card is likely to fall in the National League, and let alone whether you challenge the Dodgers or not for the division. I felt like 1-5, every day we went out there, we had to give ourselves the best chance we could to win. And we felt like that will happen once this rotation is out there.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't look at my predictions because they're uniformly awful anyway. And I didn't have you guys in the playoffs. I had you as my last team that wasn't making the playoffs. Now with Monty, I apologize. I would have put you in the playoffs. Where do you think you stack up? I mean, to me, everyone here on the East Coast says the AL East is the best division. To me, the NL West does look like the best division. Obviously, the Dodgers are great, Giants, Padres. How do you see this division shaping up?
Yeah, this division is only gotten more competitive in the last month. I still probably would defer to the AL East, quite frankly. I think the firepower in that division, it's a tough run through that division for sure. And all five of those teams are really, really good. Where we stack up maybe with the AL West or the NL East, I'm not exactly sure, but the Dodgers probably are the best team in baseball on paper. Probably, between them and the Braves. And we have to face them quite a bit and go through that. And the Giants and the Padres certainly stepped up as it went through the offseason too. I like that. I like the fact that we play in a tough division. I think that the only chance you have in the playoffs, in my opinion, is to grind through 162 games in a division like that. In a lot of ways, I think it battle tests you as you get in to the playoffs and when you get into the playoffs, or if. And I certainly felt that last year when we got into the playoffs. Like we were more prepared to step into some really tough situations because of what we went through during the regular season. So I appreciate how talented this division is, and what we're going to have to do to even be considered. And look, my predictions are as bad as yours, so hopefully yours are worse than mine, but we'll see.
Mike, on the subject of predictions and the playoff race, I did find it interesting that the late movement towards what was left at the best of the trade market and the free agent market all went to NL teams we think have a shot at least the wild card. San Diego traded for Cease, San Francisco added two people, right, in Chapman and Snell. You added Monty, the Mets added JD Martinez. The Cubs pretty late did Bellinger. Do you think that's coincidence, or do you think teams saw what ha kind of happened last year? There were five teams bunched between 82 and 84 wins in your league. The two at 84 got in. The three that didn't, and one of the 84 win teams, you went to the World Series, kind of like you got to get in it to win it. Do you think this was coincidence, or hey, man, look at the Diamondbacks. When we can improve, let's improve.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. We heard it a lot throughout the course of the offseason. Like, you know, just do what the Diamondbacks did and you have a chance to get to the World Series. My caution for teams that want to behave that way is good luck. We almost didn't get into the playoffs, right? We got in with 2 days to go, and we got in when the Reds lost to the Cardinals. And, you know, that was a razor thin edge to going between whether we were ever even going to have a chance to do what we ended up doing. I mean, that outcome certainly was on the table. I mean, the Padres were coming up right behind us, you know, with between us, the Reds, the Marlins, and the Cubs. Like, it was chaos, and I don't want to be in that position again. What do I think? I think with the number of teams that are going to be very competitive in the NL, it may boil down to that again. Yes. Do I think that teams are pushing that envelope to get that opportunity? I mean, I would, we did. I mean, we saw that. We wanted to, we tasted that last year. We know how thin the edge is going to be. And I don't want to put us necessarily in that pool. I want to be the team that's standing above that by a couple of games and watches everybody else have to deal with that as the season winds down in the last 5 to 7 days. But yeah, the National League definitely got better as we went through the last 2 weeks of spring training.
You know, I was with you NLCS games 1 through 7, and at game 2 when they won 10-0, I was like, you know, this isn't going to come back here. This series is going to end, and the Phillies are going to end up winning this. Were you surprised? Why do you think it turned like it did? I mean, if you weren't surprised, you might be the only one. Maybe you weren't.
Can I put that on one of your bad predictions? Is that
yeah, that was bad. As I said, I batted 0 last year.
Totally fair. Totally fair. Look, yeah, we got smoked in game 2. And we had lost Zach's game and Merrill's game on the road. And yeah, we were in a tough spot. I think it showed some of the resiliency and the people that may say, like, look, what we did last year was a fluke. Like, that's not a fluke. It is what we did to play the caliber of baseball we did. I mean, you think about it, Cattell walked him off in 3. Alec Thomas hit the bomb in 4 against Kimbrel. And then to go back and win 2 in Philly. Like, I mean, that team was – I mean, no disrespect to the Rangers. They were incredible too. But that Phillies team was unreal. You know, it felt like we couldn't – it was every time Schwarber came to the plate, I was, you know, I was trying to duck. And I don't know what my prediction was at the time. Certainly coming out of there, that flight home was brutal, especially with the way we lost. But it showed a level – it's what I spoke to you about before, about playing in the division that we do is like – We went to Dodger Stadium in August and got swept in 3 games. And I think we had a lead for about 1 inning or 2 innings of that entire series. And we got trampled. And it stinks when you're going through that. But they are learning experiences, especially for young players, that, hey, you could walk into another ballpark. You could get killed the way we did and still be able to regroup and come back in that series. I hope this team, the team we have now, uses that experience to our benefit as we go through the year.
You know, Mike, when that postseason began, you mentioned Gallen and Kelly. You were thought to have 2 starting pitches. Fott pitched so well for you during the postseason. Now you've added Erod and Montgomery. If I remember right, I felt like you were beating yourself up a little bit at the end of last season for not finding a 4th starter to get through it. I wonder what your obsession was to get to the point where you are. You know you're going to need more than even these 5, but to at least get 5, it seems you're pretty comfortable with.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was appropriately beating myself up given what we had done going into the playoffs. I mean, look, we tried to solve all of our issues at the deadline. I'm not, you know, we went after things. We didn't quite get things done, and it was unfortunate. It didn't rear its head in the CS somehow. We got through game 4 of the CS, but in the World Series, that the wheels fell off in that situation. And it's unfair. I put the players in the position that I did, given what I had done. Everybody that's been doing this job for as long as we have, and we'll tell you the exact same thing. I mean, you can't go anywhere without starting pitching. Your starting pitching falls apart, and you can't get started in games. You know, you're always behind. You're fighting for your life. You put a ton of pressure on your offense, and getting good starters that can go out into the sixth or seventh inning, not only does that for a game, but it also saves your bullpen. It keeps your bullpen fresh. You're not having to redline those guys as much as you might have to if you're constantly coming back and trying to chase deficits a lot. And that was our goal coming into the offseason. Like I said, I didn't have the expectation of ending with five or four, veteran starting pitchers. We more had the goal of three. We were fortunate to end up with four.
You did a great job last year. And one of the great things you did was that Corbin Carroll contract. I know at the time it was probably a record on some level for some level of experience. Obviously he looks like a superstar at this point. I would say his comp is probably Bobby Witt, who ended up getting $277 million. I think Carroll got about $111 million. At the time when you give $111 million to a guy with no experience, is that nerve-wracking for you? And, how is it now? I mean, I not too many players come back and ask for more money after they're done, and I don't suspect that he's the type to do that, but does it feel good that it looks like you got a good, great deal out of that?
I don't look at those things in really in that context. We were fortunate. I think the fact that he's going to be here for as long as he is the what I feel really good about. He is an exceptional player and person, and one of the leaders on our team. And he came into this league and kind of took it by storm, and he backs up everything, and he's humble, and he's a great teammate. And the fact that I think the biggest thing I look back on and I'm very grateful for is that we haven't built a team that's going to be here for some period of time up until this point. He was sort of the first flag in the ground for us in terms of a guy that, between he and Cattell, but he even longer than Cattell are going to be Diamondbacks for a long time. And I think that sends a message to what we're trying to do. It sends to our fans. It sends to our players that, we're not just looking to churn the roster all the time. We're not just looking to rotate it around because we traded Goldie, we traded Greinke, I traded so many of our good players that, I want to stop doing that. And I think that's the biggest thing I take away from that is that he's going to be here. He's going to be a Diamondback. Who knows? We'll try to keep him here for the rest of his career. But that's a long ways away from right now.
You have enough with your day job. I don't want to ask you to become an agent for someone, but I kind of want to ask you to become an agent for someone. I'm sitting at a very rainy City Field right now doing this. Tommy Pham was a really good player for the Mets last year, and he was a really good player. I think he hit third for you a lot of the postseason last season. With all these free agents we talked about who signed recently, including now Mike Clevinger in the last couple of days, it feels like Pham is the last real big guy out there who doesn't have a job. Would you like to stump for Tommy Pham? I'm surprised he doesn't have work. Between here and what he did with you, I thought he had a tremendous 2023, and I think he actually has a good influence with his attitude on a whole organization.
I'm not supposed to really talk about free agents. I will say this as a human being. I think Tommy Pham is a stud. He transformed our clubhouse in a lot of ways. He brought a daily winning mindset that, we had good veteran players. We had good young players that work really hard. I think what we struggled with through August a little bit and right before was in July really was, I don't know. We just had lost a little bit of an edge at some point in time. We were kind of sinking quickly. He helped transform that between he and Paul and Longo, those guys. I think he brought like a toughness and intelligence to our team and a work ethic. Nobody works harder than the guy. He said to me on the phone when we traded for him, like, I just want the opportunity to play every day in the outfield, and I'm going to work as hard as I can to show you that I can do that. And he backed up all of that, and he was a big piece to what we did. And I couldn't spin. That's all we ever heard from everybody inside of every clubhouse he played for too. When we did all the background work.
Yeah, I'll make it unanimous. A big Tommy fan as well. I want to ask you about your relationship with your manager, though, because, there are some GM-manager relationships that aren't so great. They're a little bit up and down at times. Some of them work, whether they're up and down. I'm not there every day, but it seemed to me that you and Torrey are very close, and I think, obviously, you knew him from Boston. Is that where you first met him? And, is the perception reality? Are you as close as it seems?
that we actually go back to Cleveland.
Okay.
Way back in the day. Yeah. Look, it's a tricky dynamic, right? Yes. We have a long history together and have a strong bond. I appreciate that bond. These jobs are tough. It's a roller coaster on a daily basis. There's a lot of stress and anxiety of trying to push all the right buttons and get everything right. We try to do right by our players and you get a scorecard every night. You know, you pass fail based on an outcome, and sometimes you go through a couple games in a row and it starts to build up on you. I think the relationship we have, what allows us to do is we just cut through the BS a lot. Like, we have a lot of very challenging conversations. We argue more than but we leave it there. And I think that's, I learned some of those things watching like Theo's relationship with Tito and, you know, that mutual respect that's there, but also the personal relationship and the closeness. It allows you to just, you know, there's nothing hidden, and we're able to talk about everything, good or bad, and get over it and put the players first, which is what our intention is every single day. So very appreciative. I think we have one of the best managers in baseball. I think his players love him. I think there's a reason for that. I think he is an exceptional baseball guy, and we're lucky to have him.
You know, Mike, as a way to wrap up, I wonder if I could go back to almost the beginning of something. You were really kind. I came out that week early in Arizona this year because the Dodgers and Padres were opening up. And I sent you a note. I said, can I come by and talk to you? Because before I deal with the Dodgers, who are going to be the team of the year, I wondered if I could remind everyone who actually beat them in the playoffs and was the National League champion. And that day I asked you about living in a division with them. Now that the season's begun, and especially you see the top of the lineup, and obviously they have some off-field stuff they're going to be dealing with, and now Yamamoto's had a good start. What is it like living in that division and trying to still put together what you want to put together to try to beat them in 162 and beat them in October?
Yeah, I don't know. I think every time I've turned on the TV so far this year, Mookie's hit a home run. So I tend to turn the TV back off after I watch Mookie hit. He's usually circling the bases and the lights are flashing over there. I thought, you know, a couple of their games, you know, against the Cardinals were crazy, and everything that we come to expect is they're down, it's late, they're facing bad, good relievers, and guys come up and hit bombs. It's just the way of life. It is what it is. They are not just talented. They're well run. They're well coached. They're well managed, and they have answers for everything. And it makes you have to play the game at a higher level with a different level of focus in order to beat them one game, and then go through the season 13 times of playing them. And that's only going to get harder. They're getting better and better. But that's okay. That's okay. We need to do what we need to do to be as good as we can be. And in the end, I think last year showed that you have that opportunity, you get that chance, you get into a shorter series, like anything can happen, and we'll see where that takes us. But for right now, we're focused on playing as well as we can over 162.
Well, Mike, right now, as we talk to you, you're playing the Yankees in a three-game series. You are the defending NL champions. You did make a big move here at the end with Jordan Montgomery. We know it's a busy time of the year. John and I appreciate you joining us on the show.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Good talking to you.
We, of course, thank Mike Hazen, general manager of the Diamondbacks, for joining us. John, we've played a weekend at least worth of baseball. You got a hit or error?
Well, I'm going to go with the most obvious one since he threw a no-hitter last night, Ronel Blanco. Sorry, I'm glad that you let me do that first every week. It makes it a lot easier for me. So in his eighth start as a major leaguer at age 30 to throw a no-hitter, the Astros have had more no-hitters than anybody over the last 50 years. They've had, somebody said 17 no-hitters since they've been in existence. They throw a lot of no-hitters. Obviously, they had Nolan Ryan in their history. They've had some great pitchers, obviously J.R. Richard, Wilson. But even more recently, they've had great pitching, and Ronel Blanco coming out of nowhere. People felt that Houston had three really good starters and they pitched against the Yankees. Well, Ronel got the Jays and he shut them down.
Yeah, you beat me to it, John. I was going to do a hit with Blanco, but why don't I turn it into like a subtle error then? After watching the Astros over the weekend, towards the end of spring training, I sent out a query to like a bunch of scouts and executives and said, tell me your wow good and your wow bad moment late in spring training. And one scout said to me, I'm really worried about the length of the Astro bullpen. You know, we thought, oh, they added Hader, and he's arguably the best relief pitcher in the world. But Graveman is lost for the season. They let Stanek and Norris and Matan sign elsewhere. And John, you were there. Now, again, there are better guys who we think are going to be good, like Abreu and Presley didn't pitch great either. Hader gave up a big hit to Soto. But that middle ground was not great for the Astros. I think they're always a team that figures out how to solve things, as we saw suddenly. You know, they've turned over pretty much a championship team from 2017 to now, like manager's office, front office, and everything that's not, Altuve, Bregman, and to some degree, I guess Verlander is back. So I kind of believe in the institution. But if I were looking just that weekend, we talked about the Yankees earlier in the show. The flip side is without Verlander in the rotation now, as they wait for McCullers, Garcia, or Kitty, they might not get very long starts unless one of their guys throws a no-hitter. They're going to need some of that those middle guys to pitch well.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a first week and maybe a second and maybe a third week problem where you have starters that aren't going to throw six innings. Once you get starters throwing six innings, and again, right, they have four very good starters who are on the IL, right? McCullers as well, and Urquidy, Garcia, Verlander, you know, all on the IL at this point. Verlander should be back fairly soon. Urquidy not that long after him. And I do think that Hunter Brown is really good stuff, and he'll be a six-inning pitcher soon. And same with Framber Valdez. And so, to have that shutdown 7-8-9 is huge. We saw that with the Yankees in their championship series. I'm not going to second-guess signing Hader. I mean, obviously, Abreu was terrible in the one game against the Yankees. And Presley maybe has to get used to not closing and being the setup guy. I don't know, but he's been a great closer, so why shouldn't he be a good setup man? I like having that shutdown 7-8-9. I think it's going to be bad maybe for a little while, but once these pitchers like Framber and the others start throwing six innings, I think they're going to be in good shape.
Ultimately, just a great hit with Blanco throwing a no-hitter in his eighth start, as you pointed out, which is ultimately, if you hadn't done it, I wouldn't have gone to the other side. I would have just had a hit as well. But John, why don't you thank our producers this week, since you're better with the language skills than me?
Yes, our producers do a great job. And thank you very much to Jake Brown. I pronounced that correctly. And Dan Shalom,
yeah,
who is a nice new young guy. And Joel will get his name correct. You got Ronel Blanco correct. That's a little bit harder. So I think you will get Dan Shalom correct from now on. But it's my pleasure to thank Jake Brown and Dan Shalom, who do a terrific job.
You know, maybe I could just treat him like Cher and just call him Dan, since he'll be editing our show. I'll tell you, like, I'll move my mouth, and with the editing, he could go ahead and put in you pronouncing his last name. We obviously always thank our producers for helping us through. We hope you on the New York Post Sports YouTube page, give a watch to us. Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast, give us a 5-star rating. Please put in a review. Let us know what you like, what you dislike. We're always looking to improve the show. John, we're off and running. The baseball season has begun. Please stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.